This episode in the cauldron, we have Pippa Grace, the author of Mother in the Mother. Pippa is a socially engaged artist, writer, and sculptor. Her work brings together over 26 years of training and working in the worlds of holistic health, bodywork, dance, creative writing, film, and sculpture. Pippa facilitates the sharing of stories and the creation of visual narratives at beautifully held workshops. Pippa is particularly interested in helping to give voice to the quiet, everyday stories that may otherwise be overlooked or forgotten. Her practice helps them find a creative way to speak out. A passionate feminist for as long as she can remember, Pippa specialises in working with women, exploring issues including motherhood, grandmotherhood, menarche, the female body and trauma. All of her work is grounded by an ongoing fascination with and research into the healing qualities of literature, myth, fairy tale, storytelling, dream and archetype. In this episode, we explore the themes of maternal lineage and women's experiences when they themselves become a mother. We touch on what are some of the challenges or joys women often encounter in their own relationships when they become a mother. How becoming a mother in itself can be healing for some women. And we look at how Pippa explored the role of being both a mother and a daughter in the same body. I know you will enjoy this fascinating discussion, which really looks deeper into the themes of the transition into motherhood and what it means for our relationships, both past, present, and the future. So buckle up, start the engine, or put on your walking shoes, as we have a beautiful episode for you. Enjoy. I'm Katie James, and this is the Midwives Cauldron Podcast. Each episode, I'm joined by my incredible co-host, Dr. Rachel Reed. Listen in as we hubble, bubble, toil and trouble our way through aspects of womanhood, midwifery, birth and lactation. So go on, subscribe now, and hear us on your favourite podcast host. Pippa, thank you so much for joining us today. It is an absolute pleasure to have you on, and I'm really excited to delve into some of the art and research and writing projects that you have been doing in the last few years, because I think this is a topic that is going to be fascinating for everybody. I would love for you to just be able to introduce yourself to us.
Sure. Hi, my name's Pippa, and I am a socially engaged artist. So I work with people and communities and sort of create arts projects with them. And my particular interest is in working with people's stories and just have that sort of strong belief that everyone has a story to tell, and it's that, you know, it's always worth listening and sharing those stories. Yeah, I'm also a mother to two children, one of whom is now a teenager, and have and spent around 10 years working around the theme, running an arts project around the theme of maternal lineage. So, yeah, that's what I'm kind of here to talk about today. And it's been a really fascinating journey, and I've worked with a lot of different women along the way and heard a lot of different stories. And for me, there's a real beauty in the kind of this with a group of stories, a collective. There's many things that every story is unique and individual, and yet there's also all these sort of commonalities and things that link as well. And those two together, for me, that's a really sort of a beautiful process and just something that I've really enjoyed being part of.
Mm. That's fantastic. From what I've read, and I wanted to also mention the book Mother in the Mother, that is like a culmination of this work. It's a exploring these themes, like you said, of this maternal lineage through all these women's stories. I want to know how you came to this point. Where did you start this journey of connecting with women, looking at this particular theme, and that led you onto these art projects and then to writing this book?
I think it's been a theme that has fascinated me for a long time, probably sort of unconsciously before I was even, you know, really kind of obviously exploring it. I am estranged from my birth family, and there's a sort of history within my family, my biological family, of my maternal grandmother had very severe postnatal depression when she had my mother, and they were separated for about 6 months in their first year of her life. So I think that's had kind of profound effects that have then kind of rippled forwards. And my mother, I'm the middle child of three, and she had pretty severe postnatal depression with me, and has always sort of said that she didn't attach to me. And I guess as it is when you're a child, that's just how, whatever you're dealt with, that's just normal, isn't it? So that's just kind of what I had and how things were. And throughout my 20s, the kind of estrangement became more established, I guess. And then in my 30s, I became pregnant. And it wasn't until that point, when I was pregnant, that it really hit home, the fact that there was this kind of something not there, and that a sort of sense of lack, like a void, something that I was looking for, but it just actually wasn't there. And I think I was just overwhelmed by a kind of sense of longing or yearning for something. And I didn't even quite know what that thing was. And then when I gave birth to my daughter, I just, for no reason at all, but I had just assumed for some reason that she was a boy, with no, you know, no reason to do so, but I just thought that I was carrying a boy. And then when I found out that I'd just given birth to this girl, and it was quite a traumatic birth in lots of ways. And so, I'd had lots of gas and air, and I was we'd meant to be at home, but we'd ended up in hospital. But then this amazing sort of profound moment of when I'd just given birth, and it was as if something sort of opened, I guess physically, but also emotionally, but maybe even spiritually as well. And I just had this sense of, when I was told that she was a girl, I was like, oh, she might go through this in the future. She might have, you know, her own children. And it was just a sense of this line of women that sort of unfolded out in front of me, potentially, that also then linked me into a line of women behind me as well. And a sort of sense of connection I guess a sense of maternal lineage, that it didn't really matter within this bigger picture that my mother and I were estranged, because it was just a much bigger, a much bigger concept that went far back in time and far forward in time. And yes, so that really was the kind of the thing that got me really fascinated. And between the time of my two, then I had my next child about 4.5 years later. And in the time in between, my maternal grandmother died. And there was a time when we were, even though we were quite fractured and estranged as a family, she was like one of these real kind of key people. And we were all in the hospital. And there was a time when I just thought, oh, this is kind of amazing, because there's like my maternal grandmother, my mother, myself, and my daughter. So like these four generations of women all there together. And yeah, it was it just felt quite profound, and quite an extraordinary experience. And for that chunk of time, I think she was in hospital for about a month and then she passed away. It was as if the estrangement and all of that sort of stuff just faded into the background, and we were all there and all connected in some way. So yeah, not long after my second daughter was born, I just decided to create a project that would explore this fascination that I had with this theme. And I then very quickly found that it fascinated lots of women. And yeah, became a big project.
Yeah, really big project. I love this idea of you know, you talk about in the book and as well of like this red thread, or so I envision it as well, of these women standing behind us and these women that are almost there in front of us and what will come as well. And you talk about it in relation to Mariushka dolls and like being the one in the middle of like you've taken them all out. And that really made me stop and think, actually. Obviously, we've talked about this quite a lot on the podcast and as midwives, but being that person right in the middle with a mother, a grandmother behind us, and everyone is that, if you've then given birth, you're that person in the middle. It was just kind of like, I don't know why. It just really made me kind of stop and go, this is something really important to talk about, because we know that what has happened with our grandmothers and our mothers is imparts itself into us whilst we're in our mother's womb. And we know that that's also going to be passed on. And so it's this sort of connection all the way through, but thinking of it even further back and further forward was fascinating for me that you brought this kind of topic up.
Yeah. And I'm not quite sure when I first found out about the fact that if you're pregnant with a female fetus, that they will have the eggs that will become the next generation already inside them. So that there's the three kind of generations all for a while during pregnancy within one body.
Yeah.
And that kind of blew my mind.
Yes, likewise. When I found that out, I was like, what?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. It's kind of incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to some of the women last night who were part of the project, and there was a couple of them whose own mothers had passed away, but they were saying how, because of that connection, it does feel like their children are connected to their grandmother, even though she's not alive. And they were saying, and in a way they were, because they would have actually physically been there together in the same body at one point. So, yeah.
They're pretty awesome creatures.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It is a real wow moment. I know. And the thing is, we know this and we talk about it sometimes just off the cuff, but when you sit and think about it, it is that, oh my God, moment. And that's why I really enjoyed reading the book as well, of getting those moments of like, I just need to sit with that. That's really interesting, looking at this maternal lineage.
Oh, I'm just thinking about that kind of biological connection and the lineage and the increasing research looking at how memories are also passed down and what potentially, it's absolutely fascinating. I had an experience a while back when I was doing, and this is going to sound very, very woo, when I was doing this kind of meditation thing, and in the meditation, with my eyes closed, I looked down and I very clearly saw myself wearing a dress and knew that it was an ancestor. And then it kind of went and I carried on. It was really clear and I could still see the dress. And I'm trying to work out where it was probably about 1920s, quite working class English, kind of black, but it had been faded because it had obviously been washed up. But it was it was just really clear, almost like a memory for me. And yeah, and I've always wondered, is that some kind of, you know, connection through the lineage? Is it some kind of genetic memory? Was it just actually woo? I don't know. I have to try and find out who that ancestor was.
Yeah,
absolutely. Sounds like kind of workhouse gear as well.
Well, it was like a maid's, not a maid's. Yeah, I don't know. I'll have to do some research at some point.
I need to do some research. I mean, we talk about it biologically, and you know, there's big studies looking at the famines, for example, in, it was the Netherlands and you know, those the daughters, the children of those grandmothers and the impact of that in terms of medically what happens. And we see this epigenetic, how do we grasp, how do we look at those memories? And we know also, you know, there's lots of research coming out now in terms of trauma that comes through those lines as well. And that's sort of embedded within us and comes out in different ways. So this is all one of those sort of almost new but fascinatingly growing pieces of research, which I just think is so important. And it is important to look at it in different ways and think about that, because it does impact on who we are as women and how we become mothers. And I think that's the big thing. And that's the big thing that you looked at when you interviewed 50 women, I believe it was, for their stories of what that impact was when they themselves became a mother. And yeah. The question you asked them was, how does the way in which you were mothered affect the way you mother your own children? And I just wanted you to talk to that a little bit more, because there must have been some fantastic themes that came out.
Yeah, it's kind of, I've just found that question really sort of really useful, because it's kind of like almost anyone you ask that to has a response to it, even if they aren't necessarily parents themselves. But I just think the mother figure in your life can often be, whatever your experience was, can often be something that is incredibly powerful and impactful as a relationship, but also isn't necessarily one that we reflect on and talk about that much. So to give people the kind of space to think back to their sort of upbringing, their relationship with their own mother, but then to take it forward to think about, has this impacted me? You know, how has that relationship then impacted the way that I now relate to, say, either being pregnant or with my own children? And there's something about the sort of complexity of both of those relationships at the same time. And that's what I was particularly interested in exploring, that you're not just kind of giving birth and having a child in a vacuum. You've already got this whole kind of imprint of what mothering is. And in sort of both emotional and a behavioral understanding. Can you still hear me? Because I've frozen in a really bad position now.
I can hear you, but your video's frozen. Correct. What's going on with us guys today?
All right, let's try that again.
Let's do the off and on button, because that one always
works.
There
we go. Yep.
Yeah, perfect. There we go. High tech. So high tech. Yeah.
Okay. I may have lost my thread.
I know. Sorry.
What was I saying? It was about the complexity, wasn't it, of the relationship.
Yes.
Going in both directions, and that the impact of the, yeah, the sort of behavioural. That's rather right to say that emotional, psychological, and also the physical, all of those things of the way that you have been, or that a person has been mothered, is still there within them. The history, historically, that relationship, and also potentially a relationship that's still there in their lives today. And then they have a relationship with their own child. And I think particularly when someone has a first child and becomes a mother for the first time, and that's such a huge transition and such a huge transition for them, but for the whole family, and changes all the dynamics. And to have those two kind of relationships within that. So I was always kind of really focused on the central figure, like you were speaking about earlier, of this mother who's both been a child and is now becoming a mother. And yeah, there's just something for me in the complexity of that that is fascinating. And just sort of hearing stories, one of the really common things that women would say is that they would have every intention of doing things differently, and then open their mouths and, you know, say literally a phrase that their mother had said to them.
Yes. Oh God, I wanted you to bring that up as well. Definitely.
That just seems so common, you know, and it's like people would be absolutely adamant that they were, you know, never ever say that particular thing that their mother said to them. And then, you know, something that their child does, it's just an instinctive reaction before they've managed to kind of work out what they're doing, and they just say it.
And you're like, oh my God, I've turned into my mother.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I think we can help that somehow. And it's just there, isn't it? But it's also that repetition, like you've heard it so many times and then you become it. So it's, and when people are estranged, I can never say that word, estranged from families, or there's you know, this real hurt, there's this pain, there's been a difficult or traumatic kind of relationship between mother and the child, or the person who's become a mother now. I think that must be really difficult, that you may have really wanted to separate yourself from what has happened before. And then if that suddenly comes out as instinct, that's a really difficult fight to be having.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be incredibly painful. I think there was a few women who spoke about that. But also, I mean, just speaking for myself, I found sometimes that actually felt okay. And sometimes it almost felt quite lovely that some of the positive things, so that even though I'm estranged from my mother, some of the positive things that she would do, like sort of singing to me and things like that, I would then take that forward and do that with my children quite instinctively. So it felt, as well as being a very difficult issue, it also felt that at times the fact that there is this kind of unconscious connection that goes beneath, that sort of runs beneath things like estrangement, that there, yeah, that I found at times that there could be a more sort of positive side to that, that I found almost beautiful. You know, I think it's just a kind of sense of like, oh, okay, so even though I can't have a physical relationship with my mother, there are still some aspects from her. She was like really creative as well, and I feel like a lot of that kind of comes through with my children. And yeah, so yes, it can be very painful, and I feel like there can also be, you know, kind of sort of positive sides to it as well.
And I think when you become a parent, you see your parents differently, kind of more compassionately, I guess, you know, that you can, you know, to think, you know, really brings up that, you know, my parents did this with me. When you've got a new baby, my parents were up through the night with me. My parents probably felt this level of frustration with me. It's a really interesting shift. And yeah, and my mother used to remind me when, because my daughter was, what do we call them, challenging?
Are you trying to find the right word there, Rachel? Sorry, I'm not laughing.
But you know, she liked to remind me that was exactly how I was. You know, that she'd, there's some kind of validation from that. Yes, this is what you did to me. This is how I had to.
I sometimes feel like that with my children as well. I kind of I just sort of feel like, just you wait, you know, until you have your own children, and then you'll see.
Yeah, but I you know, there's definitely that connection of that kind of real recognition and understanding that the women who went before you also went through this process of mothering in this intense phase. You know, it is challenging at the best of times, mothering.
Yeah, I think intense is the word, isn't it? That's kind of, You're still doing something interesting.
What the hell is going on?
You just did a wave like the queen while flickering. It's very odd, Katie.
Can't stop it. It's like back in the 70s, the 80s, you know, when the TV would go. It's because we're talking about childhood.
And you've gone back to the TV.
I'm really like pushing some kind of psychic vibes in, going back to being a child and having these real flashbacks with my mum and then thinking about what my mum would say.
It's coming through on the screen.
It's coming through on screen. Or maybe my mum's doing it, like some kind of vibe. She knows we're recording this right now. And she's, for the listeners, because I will keep this in. if only I could just have this snapshot. I am literally like 1980s flickering video constantly.
I'm going to try and take a photograph of
the poor Pippa
flickering.
Is basically not having any reactions from me at all when she's saying this really profound, beautiful stuff. Stop now. Yeah, perfect. And then there's me with no, and you can't even see me reacting to you going, yeah, I'm agreeing. And then I come back on and it's just like, at least it's not the voice going. You know, my voice is is the most important thing.
No, because then you'd have to edit.
And now it's gone. You can't take a picture. There's no proof.
No, it's gone. I know. I've got my phone. I've got my phone ready.
Oh, thanks. I'm hoping it's not going to go there. Thank you.
God, now I'm trying. Oh, we're off again. It's like every time my brain starts to think, it goes. I'm just not going to think. I'm just going to be quiet for the rest of the interview and go off mute.
We'll be right back.
I just wanted to pop into your luggles and tell you about my brand spanking new podcast, The Feeding Couch. This podcast ain't just designed with pregnant women or new parents in mind, but also for all of us working in the space of birth work. This is the podcast where I hand the mic over to a different mom, dad, parent, or even grandparent to take us on their feeding journey. Every story matters. It's often through hearing others' experiences where we find our own inner knowledge, strength, and courage. Listen in to hear the stories told of triumph, challenge, heartwarming, tear-jerking, fist-pumping, and how we each deal with our venture into this new world emotionally, socially, and physically. Whether you're a student, a newbie midwife, doula, lactation exam prepper, or just hungry for more knowledge, these stories will also give you a backstage pass to the global lactation clinic. Whether you're pregnant and seeking information or supporting those on their journey, I can't wait to see you on the couch with me soon. Oh, and a little favour, your reviews on Apple Podcasts mean the world. They're like magic beans that help spread the podcast out for those who need to hear it. Let's make this something amazing together.
You just need someone to come and bash the side of the TV. That used to always work.
You need
work,
the dad it? Figure, you know, with, I imagine like now with the Y front vest, or is that Y front pants? It's not Y front vest. Is it? Let's just stick to mothers, maybe. Let's not go to. String vest.
The string vest and the white fronts.
Oh, with stains. The white one with like stains.
All right. Okay, Katie, you were right off topic now. Come back.
Oh, there we go. Typical. Brilliant. There was something you mentioned and I wanted to, now I've gone off topic and I really wanted to bring it in. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, she says, like the newsreader. Right, back on topic. We were touching base on that kind of, you know, finding yourself doing what your mother did, but being in this new role. And also you talk quite clearly, I think it's at the end of one of the chapters, and it's about how becoming a mother in itself can be very healing. And we were touching on that just now, but I wanted you to speak to some of the themes that had come up in specifically how that was healing, because I think this is a really important topic to touch on.
Yeah, I found it really fascinating because that was my experience, was that being a mum myself, as well as kind of highlighting the lack in my life of having a maternal figure, also really put me in a sort of maternal space. And it was somehow that being in that maternal space was then healing for me. And I didn't really understand that or appreciate it at the time, but had a sort of sense of it. And then I think I was researching it and someone was talking about how your brain rewires as a new mother. So it's not only that the baby's brain is, when you're going through hopefully an attachment process, it's not only their brain that is wiring up positively, but that your brain is also rewiring. And that just made such sense to me because that was my experience, was that things that I'd never maybe felt that I'd physically experienced, like huge amounts of sort of affection or holding and physical contact and love, that now that I was, in a sense, giving that to my child, it was like by doing that, being in that process, I was almost receiving it as well. And it somehow, yeah, I feel like it rewired my brain and made me more aware of what maternal feelings are and how it can be. And it was a theme that, so I'd had this very kind of strong experience myself around that. And yeah, it was a theme that other women kind of brought up as well. And it's not like a simple sort of, oh, this is great, like a sort of just easy kind of joyous healing. It's with its pain, because I think, and sometimes I found a sense of like, oh, how am I meant to mother when I've not been given that? You know, almost as if it's like a sort of a bank, you know, like the deposits have been put in and they're being drawn out and no one's actually, you know, put the stuff in there to begin with. So sometimes it felt like I was kind of mothering from a place of lack, and that's been incredibly painful. And I just like, oh, I've got nothing to give because I wasn't given that. But then at other times, it's just like, oh no, it's there. It's just there anyway. It doesn't matter kind of what's gone before. It's there anyway. And by experiencing it and wanting to give that love and affection to my children, it somehow has, yeah, refed something in me. And I think, I don't fully understand it, but I think it's a lot to do with attachment, and that maybe I didn't have a secure attachment figure, and that then having a child and all that sort of, all those hours that you just spend holding them and looking into their eyes and kind of what that kind of incredible time and the brain chemistry, I think, that goes on during that time. I think that really profoundly affected me and maybe somehow made me feel more stable and more loved and more loving as well.
And you're right that when there has been difficult, complex relationships in the past, and it feels like you're almost coming into mothering without the foundations, as some women will feel, it can feel very frightening to embark upon this journey to transition into motherhood. And I think when there are other, perhaps, mother figures or supportive figures around that are encouraging you to be able to experience this bonding process, that's that strengthening, that's that attachment that can actually continue to happen despite what has happened in the past to you when you were the infant or when you were the child. And like you say, that was a real wiring of your brain and your little girl's brain to be together and to almost have an opportunity to start again and go forward and bring this line and change some of what had happened in the past, as you talked about with the, you know, the postnatal depression that had run through, and how long that had run through this line is also an interesting question. And sometimes we don't get to answer that. And we know that often these things repeat themselves. And so when we can have supportive others around us to encourage this bonding with our children, to encourage us to listen to our gut instincts that might be quite deeply buried there, but they are part of us being human and giving birth, and to try and bring those forward and maybe leave the past behind us, is a complex thing, but something that seems to be incredibly important if we can have that.
Yeah, I think, and I really agree with this idea of other being surrounded by sort of having other supportive, not necessarily women, but sort of maybe sort of maternal figures. And like there were, that was definitely a theme that came up quite a lot in the book, and we called them other mothers. And it feels like, certainly for me, that made a huge difference, that within my life I had sort of sought other maternal figures and just been really lucky to be around. Like I had my first partner, his mother was like this incredible sort of maternal figure. And she, I just learned so much just from seeing her and how she was with her sons. And And I've also got an aunt who I saw her bringing up her children and the kind of closeness and attachment that they had. And I think there was all these different, I don't know, I wasn't maybe consciously doing it at the time, but I think I did seek out maternal situations maybe, or just seeing that. Not that I was necessarily needing it myself, but just wanting to witness, well, maybe I did actually, but yeah, sort of to witness it and to be around that. And that then gave me, because I guess we learn, don't we, through what we experience and what we see.
Totally.
And I then knew that there was a way of parenting that felt, I suppose, very loving, kind, attached, that sort of love is the most important thing, and that then felt like it came relatively naturally when I had my children. I mean, you know, not without its challenges.
No, of course not.
And I feel very grateful for that and for those other figures. And yeah, like I say, it was something that came across with quite a few of the stories that women spoke about. Maybe like a sibling. I think someone spoke about an older sister or an aunt or a childminder who had, you know, if there had been an absence of their mother, but this other person maybe had stepped in and taken that role. And I think it's really important to know that it doesn't have to be biological, you know, it doesn't have to be from the mother. Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's so much kind of pressure in a way put on that mother relationship, mother-child relationship. So I found it really beautiful to realise that there can be a more sort of like a larger community type feeling, and that there's almost like a natural thing. I'm not saying that that always happens, but that hopefully it can happen, that if the maternal figure, for whatever reason, isn't able to look after her child or to fully kind of attach to them, that there can be other people that step in.
Absolutely.
Mm. And we've kind of lost that community, haven't we? We've had it globally and historically, yeah. That collective, we've talked about this on the podcast, the collective culture of women at birth, but that would have carried on, and we would have raised our children in, you know, with the support of other women. That's the normal way to do it. And we're often doing it now with very disconnected and without a lack of that
support.
Yeah, and
that to me is so sad. And I remember particularly with my first child, just how isolating it can be, and how you can just feel like it's just you and this young infant sort of, you know, in a house together, and that it's, I don't know, to me that just isn't it'd be so different to be in a room of women who may or may not be related to you, and to kind of, you know, be able to sort of share the care of the child. And yeah, it's I feel that we've lost a lot through not having that kind of sense of community. And I feel like a lot of women I spoke to are incredibly isolated with their children. Mm. And that is no good, as I see it, for maternal mental health. It's I just think we need all the support we can get. And yeah, I don't even know why there's a thing. Sometimes I feel like women feel like, oh no, I've got to be able to do this on my own or be independent or something. And it's kind of like, no, I was like that with my first child. By the time I had the second one, I was like, bring it on. You know, I just want all the support. I kind of had people come and stay, and I was just like, I'll just have all the support that's going. And yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, the kettle is never stopped boiling. It's just like constant cups of tea come in. I don't care. Yeah. I just need you. And I think we have, you know, we have mothers groups, and we have online, you know, that's, we've become much more online, particularly in the last 2 years. But it's also not the same. We've got a huge amount of, you almost want that kind of older figure or someone who's a little bit ahead of you. And I think sometimes that's really good when there are some mothers groups and you've got like a staggering of ages of the baby. So at least, even if it's a couple of weeks, someone else is experiencing something and can say, do you know what? This is going to happen. It's going to be probably an awful couple of nights, but it will get better. And just a tiny bit of reassurance. But also when you're in a group of women who are experiencing everything at the same time, you also want these other sources where you've kind of had that osmosis effect of learning without really recognizing, but you're copying, you're mimicking, and that's how we learn anything. We learn to walk, we learn to talk. It's mimicking. Breastfeeding's the same. We don't see anyone breastfeed. We just see images of a baby being held, but we never see them attach onto the breast, and we wonder why we might have some troubles to breastfeed. Yeah. And so I think definitely we're living in this era where it is about getting back to work, getting back to a new body, or the old body, I should say, from the new body. There's a lot of competition on social media as well, like in terms of, I mean, it's even starting pre-pregnancy almost, and then during the pregnancy. And then, you know, we've got so many different types of celebrations and gender reveals and cakes and then baby showers. I've forgotten what they're even called. And, you know, everything that's going to be perfect and everything has to be styled. And yes, so much pressure. And actually, you know, particularly in those first few postpartum days, I mean, who's brushed their hair for the mm-hmm. first 4 days, or yeah. even the first, you know, in the first month, and you're still in your pajamas? I'm the midwife that goes, bloody good on you. You're still yeah. in your pajamas at midday. Excellent. I'm loving it. That's great. And we should. But I think we're surrounded by these expectations of being this kind of perfect mother, when possibly our mothers didn't have that, but definitely our grandmothers didn't have that. And it was all about sort of getting in together, support. I love the fact, you know, in the 40s, we wore scarves on our hair. Why? Because we were all having bad hair days and we could just wrap our hair up in scarves. I mean, I do it. Tomorrow will be the scarf day. I don't know how we change that. And there's also good things about yep. the fact that we do connect via technology. We do have access to stuff that we wouldn't have had access to. We have access to people from all over the world, and people that are outside of our immediate community, which mm-hmm. also can broaden our field of knowledge. And we have things like podcasts and YouTube, but there is something special about that connection of actually one-on-one with being with people. And we know this in every aspect of our lives yeah. from research. It's so important. And I mean, this is a ramble. I don't know how we fix this, but it's one of those things that, where do we go? How do we fix this? How do we help women to become mothers, to come into this role gently and giving themselves time and allowing themselves to have that without all this guilt? Because there's a huge amount of guilt that seems to be around turning into a mother.
And I think the role of, I think the thing that you were saying about it, that you don't necessarily just want peer support, that it's really beautiful to have someone maybe who's a bit further ahead, or maybe a whole generation ahead. And I imagine then that the role of midwife or doula becomes so, it can just be so, so important, can't it? The relationship that you have with that person at that point that you give birth, and all that sort of those early days can makes such a difference, I think, to how you feel. And I remember a midwife saying to me, like, really early on, I was sort of worried about something, and she went, oh, well, that's just guilt. She said, you've got, like, you know, a lifetime of that ahead.
Oh, God.
I was like, oh, no. But I just feel that there's something so, yeah, there's, I think we seek as, I think as a new mother, someone could, you might, what you end up finding, because you're looking on social media or whatever, is, you know, you find the sort of matching pram and the carry thing and the this and the that, and you kind of feel like that's what you're looking for. But actually, I feel like there's a much deeper longing and a yearning there, and that actually really what we're looking for is not being told what to buy, and is not being told even really what to do, but it's just being supported. And that if you get the support, a friend of mine put it really well, or just something that she said, that you can, that the mother is completely able to do that if she has enough support around her. If she's given the support, not told how to mother, not told anything, but just looked after herself, if she's nurtured, then she can nurture the child.
I couldn't agree more. And that word nurture, that's exactly what it is. It's, and nurturing is to be able to sit and listen and support without, like you say, telling someone what to do, but nurturing their own mothering instinct so that they're able to believe in themselves, and that can then come out. And also then that nurturing is reassurance, so that when you feel reassured, you're going to take those next steps. And that's just like what we see with you know, a well-nurtured and well-securely attached toddlers or very young children, is those children who are securely attached will be the ones who first go into, say, nursery or playgroup, and they will go off and explore. And every so often they'll turn around and look for mom or dad or whoever else is the closest one looking after them. And then they go, they're still there, carry on, go and talk in the group.
Yeah.
And the kids who don't have this secure attachment are actually the ones who are more likely to be clinging on to mom or dad or next grandparent or whoever who's their closest, because it's that fear of, I'm actually, I can't go off on my own because I might be left.
Yeah.
And it's that never knowing when I'm going to have that attachment. And I think it's the same of being a mother and being securely in yourself, or secure in yourself, is when you've got people around you to say, you're okay, I'm here, you can go and do this yourself, trust yourself, go and explore, find out what you need to find out. And you will make mistakes, you know, like little toddlers, we fall down, we get back up, we fall down, we get back up. I mean, that happens, I was going to say every day as a new mother, but I think it's like every hour, something like that happens, and you just go, oh my God. And then you have those moments of absolute joy because you've achieved it and you've met this goal, and you're like, oh my God, imagine this time last week, you know. And it's just so much change in those first few weeks and months.
I think what you were saying, Pippa, about that, the generational aspect, I think that's very much lacking in our, in Western culture. So we, you know, you do have groups of women getting together who are all within the same generation, I think. And I think that's part of the kind of invisibility of women past a certain age. Once they're no longer mothers themselves, they're invisible. They're not worth anything. They're kind of pushed to the outside of our culture. There's certainly not a mixing, you know, when women get together, it's very rarely, as you were saying, you know, in a group that has multi-generations within it. You know, we don't go and have a cup of tea with the 60-year-old down the street. We meet with the woman that, you know, the same age as us. You know, I think there's a lot we're missing from these elders and their experience and their wisdom and their support. And often just, you know, as you were saying, just that kind of, that word of just, you know, you're doing it. This is how it goes, and you've got it.
It's a huge lack, isn't it? And something that it's become so normal now that there is that lack that it's almost like we don't even sort of recognize it. And I think it's, that thing that you were saying about old women becoming invisible, that so rather than being revered for their wisdom and their knowledge and understanding and probably, you know, a good sort of dollop of common sense and kind of, you know, just a kind of a sense of having been through it and come out the other side, that we're just not around that. And I think that's really, really sad. And I suppose that's also that came up a lot within this project, is that sometimes you would see that women, maybe their own mother or other women in, you know, their family really did step into that role and really did kind of support them and have their back. But I feel like that was more the exception than, you know, than the common theme. I feel like it was more sometimes just through distance, you know, people being really far away from their family, but more often they're just, it not being, I don't know, just is it not being how we raise children these days. And, you know, that just that people are around much more so around their peers and are just really lucky if they do have some older, wiser women in their community who can sort of just hold their hand, I think, and just sort of have their back as they, yeah, as they transition, particularly, I think, with the first child, particularly with that transition. It's such a, yeah, such a huge, huge thing. And I think if you just, if you've got that support from other women who've been through it, and it's like, it's okay, you know, just that reassurance, it's okay. It's fine. You know, yeah, like you say, you're going to get some things wrong, or, you know, things might be tricky, but you've got this. Yeah, I think that's so vital. And I would love that to be more encouraged in our society, to have these, yeah, sort of multi-generational relationships.
Wouldn't that be wonderful if we could set up specific mothers' groups that had three generations? I mean, some you'd have to probably pick and choose, because there'll be some people where you'd go, oh, that's a bit too brusque, and I'm not quite ready for that in the first few weeks postnatal. But yeah,
I would be allowed
totally
to go.
Banned, Rachel. You'd be not on my list. Sorry, you're not invited to my new groups I want to set up. Multi-generational mums groups. I think going back, it's reassurance and listening rather than advice giving and telling people what to do is the main thing. Because, like, having been a midwife, I can remember clearly one experience of, you know, when you've got the curtains in the wards, so we don't have much privacy. And for some reason, when you close the curtain, psychologically, you think you've closed the door and you can't, no one can hear you, but everyone can hear you. And I was with another woman helping her breastfeed or something, and I could hear the grandma talking to the mum, and the stuff that she was saying was making the hairs on the back of my neck go up. And I was thinking, oh, yep. Support and reassurance rather than in my day, we did this and this and this, and, you know, get this in the bottle and a bit of gripe water, stop my baby crying. It's like, yes, because it used to have alcohol in it. And so there's these things as well, which maybe we would want to avoid. So there might be, in my imaginary multi-generational mums group, we'd have to do like a checklist of what are your beliefs and how do you express them?
We spent a few weeks after my first daughter was born. We had to live with my partner's family for a few weeks, and his mum probably had an entirely different belief system to me, and, you know, had done things completely differently. And I was trying to do, you know, kind of washable nappies. And I think for her, you know, disposable nappies had been such an amazing kind of thing that she was like, why are you doing this? And I think that she probably constantly was just like, oh no, what are you doing? You know, putting these big sort of bulky nappies on and all these other things. But she was amazing because she didn't voice that in a way that I think she held that. I mean, you know, occasionally it would kind of come out, but really what she did was just be there. And, you know, she never interfered or sort of said, oh, don't do this or do this differently. And so I feel like, probably without really thinking it through, but she was making a choice to just support this woman who she didn't know that well, and, you know, could see that I was struggling. And but she was just there as a sort of kind presence and an extra pair of hands. And yeah, I think that made a huge difference, actually.
Wow, that's wonderful to have. And quite hard. It's a bit like, you know, being a midwife, and we feel like we always have to do something, and we need to sit on our hands and just be kind of in the back of the room and allow a woman to birth. And it's that you've got all this knowledge because you've been there, done it, but maybe 25, 35 years ago. And to not then go, oh, this might help, is hard. Really hard, I would think, as a grandmother. And I mean, when we start moving into those roles, we will experience that for ourselves. That needs to be your next book, I think.
Yes. Yeah. I hope that I will be a lovely, patient grandmother.
I'm sure you will.
I don't know. We'll see. Because it must be hard, mustn't it, if you have a sort of strong belief of, particularly because some things have changed so much to do with childcare, and you know, like whether you, you know, the sort of lying the baby on the front or the back and those kind of things. If you, if you're as a grandparent seeing something that you've been told is absolutely not the thing to do, and then this person is doing that because that's what they're being told is the right thing to do, that must be pretty hard. Yeah. Well, it'll be an interesting journey. My daughter was asking me the other day, she's saying, oh, do you want to be a grandma, mum? And I was thinking, yeah, you know, I feel like that would be a pretty amazing experience. And, but yeah, I'm sure it has its challenges.
I'm sure it does. Rachel, do you have any questions?
Yes.
I'd like Pippa to, I'd like to ask Pippa as well, if she'd like to close us with something. And I would like to ask you if I'm allowed to read the quote that I put in the notes.
Yeah, please do. Yeah, it was really interesting that you pulled that piece, and it kind of took me back to the, yeah, writing that at the time and thinking that. And yeah, yeah, so I'm very happy.
Oh, good. You're connecting.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, there you go. Well, that sounds like the best thing to do then, Kate.
I will leave this in. The editing will be easy. but before I say that, Pippa, would you like to leave us with any final thought?
I just really enjoyed this conversation. I feel like it's a really rich topic. And I think what I'll take away from this is this idea of, you know, the sort of the need for multi-generational relationships and the fact that these don't have to be biological, and that more of that in our society would be really good thing, I think. So yeah, I'm looking forward to a new group that you're going to set up.
But I won't be allowed to go to.
But Pippa, you're more than welcome, and you'll be first on my list.
And yeah, it's just really interesting because this the project is 10 years old now. So we started on we're about to come up to UK Mother's Day this weekend, so on Sunday. And so it's literally, we started on Mother's Day 10 years ago. So it feels like, yeah, quite kind of like amazing to look back and look back at this project and see, I suppose, that the project itself is also just like a kind of point in time. It was just a point in time that these stories were collected, but that the stories also kind of go forwards and backwards, and that people will, you know, potentially read them into the future, and they will hopefully touch other people. And I've been sort of run a writing competition across the last month, and new women have been submitting their stories. And I just feel that I love the fact that it just continues. And every time I receive a new story, it's like this amazing gift that someone's sort of sat down and about these questions and thought about their relationship with their mother and with their child and the three together. And yeah, I just feel, I'm really interested in the fact that it's, part of me is like, oh, 10 years, okay, we're done now, you know, that's enough of that. Well, what's next? And you know, and there's plenty of other things I'm working on, but it's also really, it's been very touching to think back to the project and to hear from some of the other mothers who've been involved in it and to see how their journeys have maybe progressed over time, and that what they wrote maybe 5 or 6 years ago isn't necessarily, you know, what's going on for them now, and that things have changed and developed, that all the relationships may have changed. And yeah, it's just been, I guess for me, it's like this sort of 10 years on feels like, yeah, like a little reflective time. And so yeah, I've really enjoyed having this conversation and thinking back to why I did the, you know, kind of created the project in the first place. And I'm glad that it's still relevant and still interesting.
And I love the book cover.
I knew you would, Rachel.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Thank you. Yeah, yeah. A friend designed that, and that became the logo. And yeah, the doll within the doll within the doll.
It's fantastic. Really great. It's been an absolute pleasure, Pippa, to have you on the podcast. I'm really grateful that you are with us, and I am going to read a quote that stood out for me from the book, and to close us out, I think. Pregnancy is the only time that we are entirely embodied by or embody another human being. The shift from fetus to infant, to child to adult, sees the two bodies separating further and further apart. Yet when a woman herself becomes pregnant, it is as if she links directly back into an intact matrilineal network where all the mothers, all the wombs, all the fetuses and infants are connected. This does something peculiar to maternal temporality. It has the ability to stretch time out in linear directions to the distant past and future, and equally to concertina in upon itself to a point that is always in the present, folding out, folding in, the past and the future, hinged together like delicate butterfly wings, in the way that matryoshka dolls can be opened out and displayed in a long line from smallest to biggest, or packed one inside the other, becoming one body, one space, one time.
That's gorgeous.
Thank you, Pippa. It's been a pleasure. Really appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed it.
What an utterly lovely episode. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. For more information on where to get hold of Pippa's book, her art, and much more, see all the links, as always, in our show notes. And of course, on our Instagram page, at The Midwife's Cauldron. You may even catch the wonderfully ghostly picture Rachel took of me on camera whilst we recorded. As always, a huge thank you for all of the beautiful comments coming in on Instagram, as well as the ratings and reviews you are leaving us on your podcast platforms. They really make our day. We wouldn't be doing this without you guys. Well, maybe we would, because we do like to talk to ourselves about this type of stuff. But that doesn't let you off the hook. If you haven't, then please take the time to rate and review us on Apple Podcast so we can keep reaching more and more people. And we keep having an excuse to record. Thank you also to all of you that support the show over on our Patreon page. And if this is something you like the sound of doing, then all the links are below. You can support us for as little as the price of a going out of date bread roll on the knockdown shelf, or splash out and go for a freshly baked French baguette. We are so thrilled to have you with us, stirring up the bubbles in the cauldron. And of course, as always, here are the bloopers. Until next time. Okay.
My phone here, turn that off.
Oh yeah, turn your phone off.
Doesn't do anything.
Actually, I realised last week, Rachel, when we recorded, or the week before, mm-hmm. I'd left my phone on. Thank God no one had. I know. Heinous crime that I never do. Right, look at her. She's doing it as if I didn't notice.
I'm just thinking, should I turn off something on my computer as well in case notifications come through? But I'm not actually sure how to do that.
I don't know. If you've got WhatsApp open, then it'll go ping, ping.
No, I haven't. Emails. So I think it'll be okay. Let's hope it'll go back.
Look, also we have people who have big jewellery and I forget to tell them to take it off and they get animated and there's clonk, clonk, clonk and all other things. So we try and do our best, but come on, it's we're not the BBC.
Yeah.
We are the Midwest Cauldron. Wondering which of my courses is for you? Breastfeeding and Lactation, The Fundamentals has been designed for everyone working in the birthing field or those on their journey to becoming breastfeeding specialists or IBCLCs. This course gives you 7 hours of CPD and is packed with reflective learning, case studies and some pretty tough, at times, quizzes to make sure this stuff sticks. It also means you can meet me monthly in my live Q&A. This is my course that I hope will fill in the gaps that traditional breastfeeding education has left out. I want you completing this, feeling confident to support any breastfeeding or lactation challenge of those in your care. But wait, I have another course called The Feeding Couch. Who's this for? Currently, around 80 to 96% of women decide to breastfeed during their pregnancy, but by just 8 weeks after birth, a third to almost 50% of those women have stopped breastfeeding. And of those women who stopped, 80% say they stopped breastfeeding before they wanted to. Learning about breastfeeding during pregnancy has been shown to improve breastfeeding self-confidence and improve the rate of exclusive breastfeeding in the short and the long term. I believe every mum should be able to choose how she wants to feed her baby and for how long. Knowledge is power. That's why I created the Feeding Couch, designed to be watched during pregnancy or for new mums and parents who may be struggling right now with breastfeeding. The content is in step-by-step, binge-worthy whilst pregnant or for those most tired of days postpartum, totally easy to find exactly what you need and dip in and out when you need a breastfeeding answer quickly. And for you, beautiful podcast listener, there is a 10% discount off both courses when you use the code POD10, that's P-O-D-10, at checkout. To find out more, hop on over to my website, katiejames.site, and have a look at the incredible content waiting for your lucky peepers.